Sunday we studied lesson 16, beginning with chapter 31, where Jacob had been in the land of Padan-Aram. He'd worked for Laban for 20 years, married his wives, had the children, his possessions grew. Laban's countenance toward him had changed. Laban's sons were against him. God told him to return back to the land of Canaan. So he flees from Laban while Laban's gone to shear sheep. And Jacob was afraid that Laban would take his family and his possessions, so he fled from him. Laban pursued them, caught them in the mountain of Gilead, and God had appeared to Laban and told him, be careful what you say to Jacob. Don't say anything either good or bad. And so they made a covenant of peace there. Jacob journeys back to the land, meets up with Esau. What kind of meeting was that? Kind of stressful on the way, wasn't it? Jacob met with Esau. Jacob sent him word that he was coming. He sent his family across the river, but he spent the night on the other side, wrestled with an angel. The angel told him his name would no longer be named Jacob, but his name would be changed to Israel. As he goes to meet Esau, he divides his family into groups with their children, puts the handmaids in front, then Leah and her children, and Rachel with Jacob behind, and they're reconciled together, and Jacob is met by angels as he departs, and he named that place Mahanaim. Somebody tell me a little bit something about Mahanaim that happens later on in the history of the Israelites. Anybody remember? Saul's son Isbosheth ruled there when David ruled in Judah. When Absalom came to Jerusalem and David had to flee, he fled to Mahanaim to get away from Absalom. It was from there, of course, that they had the battle with each other. So that particular place does figure into the history of the Israelites later on. So Jacob and his family settled in Succoth, and they built permanent structures there. It says they built booths for their cattle, so they settled there, they built structures, and they stayed there for a while. Now, as we come to verse 18 of Genesis chapter 33, Jacob journeys up to Shechem. Now Shechem's in the north part of the land, up above Bethel and Ai, and he camped before the city of Shalem. He bought a piece of land from Hamor, who was the father of Shechem, and there he built an altar, and he called it El Elohi Israel, or God, God of Israel. Now, who built an altar to God at Shechem when they came into the land? Anybody remember? Abraham. Abraham journeyed into the land, he came to Shechem. God gave Abraham at Shechem what? Promises. At Shechem. I may be wrong about the altar. Came to Shechem, he made the promises, he went to Bethel and built an altar. Now, this is the second record of anybody buying land in Canaan. Abraham was the first. He bought what? Gave him Machpelah. And then now Jacob buys the land from Hamor at Shechem. Look over Joshua chapter 24 and verse 32. Joshua 24, 32. Jimmy, when you get that, will you read it? 24:32. Okay, so when the Israelites fled Egypt, carried Joseph's bones back with him, this is where Joseph was buried. But Joseph wasn't buried in the cave of Machpelah. He was buried here in the piece of land that Jacob bought from Hamor in the land of Shechem. Just an interesting point. So they journeyed to Shechem, camped before the city of Shalem. He bought the land from Hamor, who was the father of Shechem, built an altar there and worshipped God, named it El Elohi Israel. El means what? God. God, God of Israel. Not God, God of Jacob. God had changed Jacob's name to Israel. So, God of Israel. And God had made promises to Abraham there. I don't know why this... He did build an altar there, okay. I questioned myself when I did that. I'm sorry, I don't know why this thing gets stuck sometimes. But anyway, Shechem is in the north part of the land, up above Bethel and Ai, and this might not have been the best map for me to use here. It doesn't look too plain. But anyway, Shechem is up here on the edge in the north part. So that's where he journeyed. He'd been down here. He came back in the land. He went to Shechem. And so it sets the stage for our next story as we go into chapter 34. Dinah, now who was Dinah? Leah's daughter and the sister of Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. They were full brother and sister. She went out to see the daughters of the land. And Shechem, who was the son of Hamor, who was prince of the land, saw her, and he took her, and he, the text says, defiled her. Now, some of the other translations say that he violated her. The New American Standard says that he took her by force. Vine says that's the definition of the word, that he took her by force. So apparently he took her against her will, if you look at that. And he violated her. He fell in love with her. And he said to his father, what? Get me this woman for my wife. So he took her. He violated her. He fell in love with her. He wanted her to be his wife. So Dinah got herself in a dangerous situation, whether it was by force, whether it was willingly, but the text seems to indicate that it was by force. And Shechem lusted after her. It says he fell in love with her, but it began on a bad note. And this shows the morals of the people that lived in the land. Here is Jacob, here's his family. And the people of the land had, at least Shechem himself, had some pretty bad morals. And it kind of is a reflection of the type of people that they lived around. Jacob heard what happened, but he didn't do anything because his sons were gone. They were out in the field. He waited till they got back and found out what was going on. And they were grieved. They were angry. This was their sister. And verse 7, look at verse 7, chapter 34. The sons of Jacob came out of the field when they heard it, and the men were grieved, and they were very wroth, or angry, because he had wrought folly in Israel in line with Jacob's daughter, which thing ought not to be done. He wrought folly in what? In Israel. First mention of Israel as a people. He wrought folly in Israel. He had done things which ought not to be done. So they were very angry. They were very grieved over what happened. So Hamor comes to them with Shechem, and he says, my son loves your daughter. Please give her hint to him as his wife. And you can marry our daughters, and we'll marry yours, and we'll be one people. So Jacob's sons deceived, especially Simeon and Levi, answered and said, we can't do this because you're uncircumcised. And if you'll be circumcised, and if you'll become one of us, then we'll do what you've requested. We'll intermarry with you. You can marry our daughters, and we'll marry your daughters, and we'll be one people. But if you don't do what we've asked you to do, then we're going to what? We'll take Dinah and we'll be gone. We're going to leave. So Shechem was agreeable, and he didn't waste any time in doing what they had asked because he loved Dinah. And verse 19 says that he was what? He was more honorable than all the house of his father. Might have been more honorable, but he still did things that he shouldn't have done. His morals weren't what they ought to be, and we'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. But anyway, Hamor and Shechem called the men of the city together, and they convinced them to do what the sons of Jacob had asked, saying, you know, won't their wealth and their cattle be ours? If we do this, we'll have what they've got. So, you know, greed kind of got in the way there. So every one of them agreed to do what they'd asked, to be circumcised. So they appealed to their greed as a motivation to do what Jacob's sons had requested. So they did. So on the third day, when the men were sore, Simeon and Levi went into the city and did what? They killed every man. They killed every man with a sword. They took Dinah out of Shechem's house, so it would seem that she had been there all this time. And they took the spoils and the wealth, and it would appear that this wasn't only Simeon and Jake and Levi, but this was all the sons possibly. And they took the women and the children captive. So was Jacob pleased with this? No, he wasn't pleased at all. This was a terrible thing that they had done. And he said, "You've troubled me. You've made me to stink in the eyes of these people, and they're going to gather themselves together and they're going to kill us." So their answer was that they tried to justify what they had done. They said, "Well, should we just let him treat Dinah as a harlot?" So they tried to justify what they had done. So she went out to see the daughters of the land. Shechem took her. He violated her, fell in love with her, wanted her. Jacob and his sons were grieved over what had happened. And, of course, Hamor comes and does what Shechem wants him to do. He requests Dinah to be Shechem's wife. He's deceived. And because of that, all the men are slain. All their wealth is taken, and their wives and their women and their children are all taken captive, and they take the spoils of the land. Now, suffering wrong doesn't justify sinful actions, and that's something that we need to learn ourselves. It's something we need to impress on our children. And if we're teaching a class, it's a good application that we can make. You know, there's an old saying that says, two wrongs don't make a right. So Simeon and Levi let their emotions cloud their judgment and cause them to do great wrong. So the lesson is that we need to guard our emotions. We need to guard and be careful and restrain them. And also a lesson here, I think, is, you know, they tried to justify themselves in the wrong. What they did was wrong. It was terrible. It was sinful. They tried to justify their actions. And just today, people try to justify themselves in what they do. You know, if they do something that's wrong, then they try to justify themselves in that. And in justifying themselves, what are they doing? Trying to excuse it. They're trying to do away with the guilt of it. So, you know, Simeon and Levi tried to make a convincing argument to their father, "Well, look what he'd done. You know, he deserved this." Well, that wasn't good enough. And a lot of people today do the same thing, and they may try to make a convincing argument to other people, but they're not going to make a convincing argument to who? To God. Okay? Sin is sin, and they're never going to convince God or change his mind about it. Also, there are always consequences to sin. Sometimes those consequences are worse than they are at others. Sometimes those consequences are such that they can never be undone. And we have to suffer because of that. But remember what Simeon and Levi have done, because it's going to play a part in the continuation of the story as we get on into the story. Any questions, comments, or anything so far? If you do, just out with them. It makes the class better. So God told Jacob to go up to Bethel and build an altar there to God. Now, what had happened at Bethel? Bethel had been called Luz until something happened. What happened at Bethel? Two classes ago. Jacob was fleeing from Laban, from his brother Esau, and he got to Bethel and he had the dream, the ladder, the angels ascending and descending. God appeared to him, repeated the promises that he had made to Abraham and to Isaac, okay? So go to Bethel and build an altar there and to God. So Jacob called all these people together and he told them, "Put away your gods, sanctify yourselves, cleanse yourselves, change your clothes, because we're going to Bethel where God appeared to me, and I'll build an altar to the Lord. We're going to worship. We're going to worship God." So they gave their gods and their earrings to Jacob, and he buried them under an oak at Shechem, and they traveled up to Bethel. And God caused the inhabitants of the land to be afraid. Now, I don't know why, but he caused the inhabitants of this land to be afraid, so they didn't pursue after them. They didn't kill them. They didn't do anything to harm them because of what they'd done. So they came to Bethel. And Jacob built an altar there, and he called it El Bethel, God of Bethel. Now, one thing that we can note there is he called the people together, and he said, put away your gods, sanctify yourselves, cleanse yourselves. We're going to Bethel, where God appeared to me, and we're going to build an altar, and we're going to worship God. Now, this to me shows that worshiping God is a serious business. Somebody look over to Exodus 19, verse 10. Exodus 19, verse 10. Israel had come out of Egyptian bondage. They'd traveled down to Mount Sinai, and God was going to appear to them. And he had told Moses what to do. Greg, read that if you got it. No, that's fine. They were to sanctify themselves. They were to wash their clothes. This was serious business. God was fixing to appear to them. So, you know, they were to take some things into consideration. Number one, you know, here they were going to worship God. They need to get themselves in order. They need to get their lives in order. And they needed to wash themselves, change their clothes. They need to get that in order. So when we look at today and in denominations and in other churches, some of them, we see casual worship. Okay. Worshiping God is serious business. We need to get our minds in order. We need to have our lives in order. And we need to dress appropriately and be prepared. So it was serious when it came to worshiping God. And when we worship God today, it's serious business. And we need to teach that to our children. And they need to understand that it's serious. And it's not something that we come to in our shorts or, you know, our blue jeans with the holes out of the knees and those kind of things. It's serious business when we come to worship God. And we could talk about that the rest of the class, I guess. But just something that I saw that they did that we can think about. Rebecca's nurse, Deborah, died there and was buried under an oak, and they called it Alon Bachuth, Oak of Weeping. And the writer goes on and gives an account where God appeared to Jacob at Bethel when he was on the way to Paddan Aram and reaffirmed to him the promises and the fact that his name would no longer be Jacob but would be changed to Israel. So Jacob was afraid of the Canaanites and the Perizzites. He was instructed by God to go down to Bethel. He'd been at Shechem, so he's traveling south down to Bethel, and there to offer on an altar worship to God. So worship is to be one of respect, one of reverence toward God. That was what he was trying to tell them. So he named it El Bethel, God of Bethel. Deborah died there, and God reaffirmed the telling, or the author reaffirmed the telling of or where God appeared to him and made the promises. Anything anybody's got to say? Okay. Chapter 35, verse 16, beginning. They left Bethel, and they came to Ephrath, which was what? Bethlehem. And Rachel went into labor with her second child and was having a hard time, and what happened as a result? She died. She died in childbirth. And in dying, she named the child Benoni, which means son of my sorrow. But Benjamin, or Jacob rather, named him Benjamin, which means son of my right hand. Now, Jeremiah 31:15 and Matthew 2:17 and 18, Jeremiah talking about the judgment of captivity of Israel, and in Matthew chapter 2, verse 17 and 18, talking about when Herod had the children killed, 2 years old and under, goes back and talks about Rachel weeping for her children, because this is where Rachel was buried. They buried her here at Ephrath, which was Bethlehem, and Jacob set up a pillar as a memorial to her. And at the time of the writing, Moses wrote this book, he said that still remained. It was still there. And they came to the land of the Tower of Edar, and they dwelt there for a period of time. And it was at that time that Reuben committed fornication with Bilhah. So keep in mind, Reuben, who was the oldest, now has committed fornication with Bilhah. Who was Bilhah? one of the handmaids. Okay, she had two of the children of Jacob's children, and Simeon and Levi. Reuben was the oldest. Simeon and then Levi, the next oldest in line, had slew the men of Shechem, which leaves Judah. Look back at 1 Chronicles chapter 5 and verse 1 and 2. Angela, if you will, turn to that. And Matt, will you look at Genesis 49, or we'll just all look at Genesis 49. 1 Chronicles 5, 1 and 2 first. Okay. Reuben was the firstborn. He would have gotten the birthright, but because he committed fornication with Bilhah, that privilege was taken away from him and given to Joseph's two sons, who were who? Ephraim and Manasseh. Okay? Ephraim and Manasseh. They got the double portion, and they were the ones who had the possession in the land. Okay, so Reuben, the oldest, doesn't get that. And then we got Simeon and Levi. Look at Genesis chapter 49, begin verse 1. Jacob calls all his sons together. He's going to bless them and before he dies. He says in verse 2, "Gather yourselves together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel your father. Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, and the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Unstable as water thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defilest thou it, he went up to my couch. Simeon and Levi are brethren, instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. O my soul, come not thy into their secret, into their assembly. Mine honor be not thy united, for in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they dig down a wall. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I would divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Judah, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Judah is a lion's whelp from the prey, my son. Thou art gone up. He stooped down. He crouched as a lion, as an old lion. Who should rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come. And unto him shall be the gathering of his people." That verse, chapter verse 10, talking about the coming of Christ. Verse 7. "Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel." When the land was divided, what portion did Simeon get? Anybody remember? If you remember, they were incorporated into Judah. They had part of the land of Judah, but they were incorporated into the land of Judah, so they were absorbed in Judah's possession. What happened to Levi? They were given cities. They were the priests, so they didn't have their own possession. So we see this prophecy coming to pass. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. And that's exactly what happened. Just interesting thought there. So just kind of keep that in mind as we go through our study. So they came to Ephrath. They traveled down from Bethel down to Bethlehem, which is where Ephrath was. So they're traveling south. They continue to go south. Rachel went into labor. She died, giving birth to Benjamin, who was the Jacob's what? Twelfth son. Okay, named him Benjamin, set up a pillar as a memorial, and he traveled down to the Tower of Edar, and Reuben there committed fornication with Bilhah. So it again gives us the sons of Jacob by their mothers, and we won't go through that, but just kind of keep those in mind, especially if you're teaching children. That's something that they'll really enjoy learning, maybe already know. Jacob came to Mamre, to the city of Hebron, which was Arba. And who lived there? Isaac. Isaac lived there. Isaac died. He was 180 years old, and Jacob and Esau buried him in the cave of Machpelah. Now, Isaac was 60 years old when Jacob was born, and Abraham was 160 because Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. And he died at 175. So Jacob would have been 120 when Isaac died. And they buried him in the cave of Machpelah. So he traveled down from Bethlehem down to Hebron, which was Mamre. And a city had grown up there. Came to Hebron. Isaac lived there. He died at 180. If you remember back when Jacob deceived Isaac, why was Isaac given the blessing? He was old. He couldn't see. He was afraid he was going to die. So he called Esau to him, or thought he was giving it to Esau, but he gave it to Jacob instead. But some 45 years have passed since that event happened, so he lived a long time after that. Now, very short time, as we said earlier, that he was the main character of the story. But Isaac has been alive all this time that all this has been going and happening. Sarah was the first one that was buried in the cave of Machpelah. Who was next? Abraham. And then Isaac was buried next. And then the mouth sticks again. And then Rachel, Leah, and Jacob also will be buried there to come. We have the generations of Esau listed in chapter 36. And we're just going to say the fact that he had three wives. And two of them were Canaanite women. One was a Hittite, one was a Hivite. And the other was the daughter of who? Daughter of Ishmael. He had five sons, Eliphaz, Reuel, Jeush, Jalem, and Korah. And through those sons descended the nation of Edom. And its leaders, the Edomites, the Idumeans. Names of mention, Amalek. Now this was not the father of the Amalekites because they already existed. You go back to chapter 14, verse 7. And also Seir is who the Horites came from that the Israelites had to deal with later on. So Esau took his family, all that he had, and he moved southeast of the Dead Sea to Mount Seir. It says, because Esau and Jacob's cattle were so great that the land of Canaan, wherein they were strangers, couldn't contain them. We ran into that before, and that was who? Abraham Lot. So, same problem. So he moved to Seir. So you think about how rich these people were. God had blessed them beyond measure. And you know, we don't have those riches, but God's given us something far greater and that money won't buy, and that's hope of heaven, salvation through Christ. They were very rich, and the land couldn't sustain them. God blessed them greatly. Comments or questions? Okay, chapter 38. We'll skip 37. 37 deals with Joseph. We'll pick that up Sunday morning in continuation with the story. Chapter 38 talks about the story of Judah and Tamar. Go through that right quick. A little bit of shorter time. Judah and Tamar. Judah left his home. He came to the house of Hira the Adullamite. And there he found a Canaanite woman. And he took her and married her. She became his wife. And they had three sons. Er, Onan, and Shelah. Well, Judah took a woman named Tamar to be Er's wife. But Er was wicked. So God slew him. He killed him. So Judah told Er's brother Onan to take Tamar as his wife and to raise up children to his dead brother. Well, Onan was happy to take Tamar as his wife, but he didn't want to raise up children to his dead brother, so he disobeyed God and God slew him. So Judah promised Tamar that when Shelah was grown, that she could be his wife and raise up children. But when Shelah became grown, Judah didn't do that. And he didn't do that because he was afraid that he would lose Shelah also, and that all three of his sons would be dead. So Judah's wife died, and he went to Timnath to shear sheep. Timnath was over in the land of the Philistines, or on the edge of Philistines, across from Jerusalem. He went there to shear sheep. Tamar found out that he was going, and so she took off her clothes of mourning. She dressed as a harlot, and she came and she sat and she waited for Judah. And so when he came, he committed fornication with her. And when she asked him, "What are you going to give me for payment?" he said, "I'll give you a kid." And he's talking about a lamb, a goat. And she said, well, what are you going to give me for security until you bring me what you promised that you'll give me? So he left her his ring and his staff and something else, and I can't remember what it was. Bracelet, okay, as security. And then when he brought the kid back, she was gone. And when he asked the men, he said, where's the harlot that stays here? They said, well, there's no harlot around here. So you can just imagine his surprise and what he thought about. So Judah's morals weren't what they should have been. And, you know, sometimes we think we can hide our sins. And no doubt he thought that he could hide what he did. But sin always catches up with us. And he recognized Tamar as a prostitute by the way that she was dressed. So, you know, the way we dress, the way we talk, the way we act, by our actions, people perceive things about us. And we need to teach our children those things. You know, you need to watch how you talk, you need to watch how you dress, you need to watch how you act, because that's the way people perceive us. Judah saw that. He perceived what Tamar was. So, 3 months later, Judah finds out or is told that Tamar's pregnant, that she has a child. And so Judah said, we'll bring her and we'll burn her. Pretty severe. But in the Old Testament, in order to keep society pure, what did they do to people who committed adultery under the old law? Stone them. Okay? So bring her and we're going to burn her. But when they came to her, she said, will you take this staff and these bracelets and this signet ring, and these are the owner of the child. So whose were they? They were Judah's. So Judah realized what he had done and why she had done this, because he hadn't kept his word in giving her to be Sheila's wife as he had promised. And it says she was more righteous than Judah, not righteous in the fact that she did what was right, because what she did was wrong. It was sinful. But in the fact that she had been faithful to the promise that Judah had made to her. In good faith, where Judah hadn't been faithful to that, but not in the fact that she was a righteous person. So she went into labor and she had twins. And one of them was named Perez and one of them was named Zerah. Now he was named Perez because Zerah had stuck his hand out and the midwife tied a scarlet thread around it and he pulled it back, and then Perez came out first. So they called him Perez, which means breach. Now, what's the significance of Perez in the lineage of Christ? He's in the lineage of Christ. God didn't condone what had been done, but he used Perez as one of the ones in the continued genealogy of the one that the promised seed would come through. So, questions or comments? All right. When we look at Abraham, he was 75 when he came into the land of Canaan. Nephew Lot was with him. When Ishmael was born, Abraham was 86 years old. And of course, he was 100 years old when Isaac was born. Sarah died at 127. Abraham was 10 years older than Sarah, so he was 137. And Isaac married Rebekah. Isaac was 40 years old, so Abraham at that time was 140. When Jacob and Esau were born, he was 160 because Isaac was 60 years old. And he died at 175. So Jacob and Esau had already been born and were 15 years old when Abraham died. And Isaac would have been 75 and Ishmael would have been 89. Now, Isaac was 60 when Jacob and Esau were born. Think about the fact Joseph was 17 when his brothers sold him to the Ishmaelite traders to go into Egypt. Well, he was 30 years old when he interpreted Pharaoh's dream, and this is going to be out of whack. Jacob was 130 when he moved to Egypt. Isaac died at 180. Jacob and Esau would have been 120. Well, if Jacob was 130 when he moved to Egypt, how many years passed from the time that Isaac died until Jacob went to Egypt? 10 years. So this was 10 years after Isaac's death. Joseph was 39 years old, and we take that from the fact that he was 30 years old when he interpreted Pharaoh's dream. There were 7 years of plenty, 2 years of famine, so he was 39. That was 22 years after he'd went into Egypt. And this is all out of whack for some reason. But anyway, what I'm trying to get through with all that was Isaac was still alive when Joseph was sold into Egypt. He died before Jacob went down to Egypt, and they found out that Joseph was still alive. But he was alive when Joseph came up missing, and they thought that he was dead. Now, Jacob married Rebecca at 40 years old. Abraham would have been 140, so Sarah would have been dead about 3 years. 60 when Jacob and Esau were born. When Ishmael died, he was 123. Jacob and Esau would have been 63 when Ishmael died. So Jacob and Esau were 77 when Jacob fled to Haran to flee from Esau. Now we think about, you know, these were young men, but these weren't young men. They were 77 years old when this happened. So Jacob was 130 when he moved to Egypt. Joseph was 39. So Jacob was 91 when Joseph was born. And Joseph was born at the end or near the end of the 14-year period that Jacob worked for his wife. So 91 less 14 is 77. So Isaac would have been about 137 years old, and Jacob and Esau would have been about 77. So when Jacob had his children move back to the land, he'd been 97 years old. So they weren't young men. But we'll stop there. Appreciate your attention. Thank you. He'd been over 90. Yeah. Yeah. She would have been 67, 65 when he came into the land.